are on Coming Home, and my message today is all about messy. Christmas can be messy, and I don't know about for you guys, but in my family, or how about in my head, it's a beautiful place to live, right? I have this idea of Christmas, it's going to just be like awesome, right? Because I'm a big dreamer. I am like a big optimist. Is any other optimists in the room, right? Just in your head, you're just like, everyone's going to want to come to this Christmas party. Why everyone's going to want to come and laugh at my jokes. And in my mind, I think like my kids will all like smile at Christmas and they'll all like, you know, laugh elegantly at each other's jokes. Like, oh, that's so funny, brother. Thank you for sharing, right? And like everyone has like perfect white teeth and these like big, like bold red sweaters that just keep folding and folding and folding. And you're like, hearty laughs, right? And like the food is just immaculate and it looks like it came off like a magazine and you stay up all night like deep, interesting conversations where people really want to hear what you have to say and they do things like this and you appreciate it, right? And it's just, all of it in my head is just, it's like this perfectly orchestrated, beautiful, like, moment. And then there's like the reality, right? The reality of Christmas is like you're wearing those like bold sweaters and rolling over and over and over again, but you're like sweating profusely because it's 1,000 degrees in my parents' house, right? And someone turned the heat up and threw 5 logs in the fire thinking it'd be funny to watch Chris sweat and cry, right? And then like when someone opens the gift, like they repeat the name. You guys know the curse of the gift? If they repeat the name of the gift, like, oh, an ear hair trimmer. Wow, thanks, Chris, right? Right? And you're eating a cookie, and my family says you're eating a cookie that you know that when the kids made this cookie, they licked every knife. Every knife and every Red Hot probably made its way, and they're probably thinking to me what they do. They're like, Dad's going to eat this one, whoop, right? But you don't care because you're sweating so bad, you just got to distract yourself before you pass out from the heat and the big red sweater, right? Like, so there's the ideal of Christmas, this beautiful, beautiful, happy, singy Christmas, and then you step into the reality of Christmas, and it's just messy. And I think it's beautiful. I love a messy Christmas. I was supposed to wear my ugly sweater. I have this like bright pink sweater with kittens on it, and it has like a calendar, right? If you're listening to a podcast, I'm going over my belly like this, right? It's like right on my belly. But I spilled a bunch of Chipotle on it. So I thought, the pink doesn't already work so much, then Chipotle on it probably doesn't work out as well. But I love the beauty of Christmas because it's real life. And there's moments or seasons in our life or even just like events in our life that we think it has to be perfect. It has to be clean. It has to be simple in order for it to be the best. And when you don't hit that peak, when you don't hit that ideal, then you feel like either it was second rate or it was horrible or it was a failure. And when we live in those places, I don't know about you, but it's easy just to feel disappointed. It's easy just to feel discouraged. And Christmas is anything but clean, simple, and easy. Right? Like you talk about your family, you talk about your home, you talk about trying to get the perfect gifts, for your father-in-law or your mother-in-law, and you don't know what to get, and you feel like the gift is going to be great, it's not going to be great, then you feel the pressure of like being at every, if you have kids, like Christmas with your kids at school is just, it's crazy, right? Like you have to go to the craft thing, and you have to make sure that they look good, and they shower, and you have to make sure that, you know, they have all the things they need for like all these different events, and you just get caught up in this almost this perfection. But when you look at the story of Christmas, it was a complete mess. It was really, really messy. And what we do so often is we make the Christmas story really clean, neat, and simple, right? It's like this white European young beautiful woman slid off her donkey 9 months pregnant, right? And said, oh, Joseph, it's time to birth this child. He said, of course it is, Mary. Let's go birth that child, right? And they walk in, and they're like, oh, there's no room at the inn. No worries. We're going to go in the manger because it's pristine and beautiful, right? And they step in, and she's like, oh, I'm going to give birth next to this cow that is probably really sanitized and healthy, right? And gives birth to a beautiful European white Caucasian baby that doesn't cry because no sound did he make, right? And she, her hair's perfect, and she's like, there was no screaming in that birth because I'm Mary, right? And then all these guests come at the perfect time. It's all like organized. It's like this play, like stage left comes the wise men, they leave. And then stage right come the shepherds, and it's always a positive thing, right? It's always, and somehow the drummer boy's back, they're just like just rocking out a solo, just da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? And it's really, when we think of the Christmas story, that's kind of how we sell it. And it's clean, it's neat, and it's simple. And we like it because we know what to expect. We know what to feel. We know how, oh yeah, it's Christmas, and this is what happened. And, you know, he didn't cry, and, you know, everything was just, it was just perfect. But when we do that, we're missing out. We're missing on the beauty of coming home. Because home is messy. The Christmas story is messy, because if it's true that the Christmas story has to be clean, it has to be perfect, it has to be simple, it has to be easy, well, then I'm in big trouble. Because I'm in big trouble. I look at that story in the clean, easy, simple story. I'm like, maybe Nikki and I missed the class of where you learn how to have like the silent, perfect birth and kids don't cry. And, you know, and when everyone comes, and if you're here and you came when we had a kid, big fan. Thank you for coming, right? But like, it's never the right time to have a visitor right after you have a kid, right? It's never like, oh, this is the perfect time. I didn't want to sleep, right? Come on in, right? I am totally exhausted, and I'll smile, right? It's messy. It's messy, and that's real, real life. And that's the beauty of Christmas, is that we have this God who just is crazy about you. We have this God that is just absolutely in love with you. And your mess, you're going to hear me say this several times, your mess is not a threat to the good and beautiful life. Your mess is not a threat to God. Your mess financially, maybe it's health, maybe it's friendships, maybe it's your hair, maybe it's your job, maybe it's your marriage, maybe it's your raising kids, whatever it might be. That mess does not disqualify you from getting the best of God. Because when people hear that following Jesus, because, you know, the story, let me get this out of my hands. The story of Christmas is just one story, but it's an incredible story of how it frames the rest of the life of Jesus. And for people who are investigating spirituality, people who are interested in that, and they step into the maybe a church, or they step into that conversation of, well, what does it really mean to have a good and beautiful God? And they hear, all they hear is clean, simple, perfect, home runs every time. They might think, I'm out, because I am not clean. My life is not simple. I'm anything but perfect. Like, my life right now is a hot, hot mess. And if I have to be that in order to get the best of God, well, then just count me out. I'll just go somewhere else. And it's easy. It's so easy for us to, when we talk about spirituality, even when we just think about, in our heads, we think about Jesus, so easy just to put it at this, oh, it was all simple and easy and clean, and it's anything but that. And that's why I love the story of Christmas. Because it is complicated, it is messy, and God loves all of it. And what we're going to be looking at is in the very beginning of Matthew, chapter 1, verses 2 through, I believe, 15. Can we throw it up there? This is how Matthew, when he was writing his gospel, this is how Matthew starts his gospel, with a genealogy. And, like, if you're like me, whenever I get to these parts in the Bible, I, like, kind of pretend I read it. I'm, like, really interested right away. I'm like, yeah, yeah, Judah, yep, and we're gonna turn the page, right? Because at times it feels like, yeah, we're happy for you. There's a bunch of people up there. That's great. You did it, right? You got in the book. That's an awesome thing. But Matthew is doing something on purpose. He's doing something very intentional. Because what we're going to talk through is the people that made that list, it's crazy. The people who made the list and the people who intentionally that Matthew didn't put in the list speaks of something. And what he's doing here, in the same way that John, we talked about last week, about how John frames the conversation of the Gospel of John through everything being through the Word, that we can experience heaven now, not just later. The same Word that created the heavens and the earth and this good and beautiful life in the garden is the same Word that came and moved into our neighborhoods, Jesus, and how he wants us to experience heaven. Matthew is doing the same thing by framing the rest of everything you're going to read about Jesus from here on out has to start with this story. And a genealogy would be like your credentials, especially if you're going to be the Messiah, you're going to be this great king that's going to solve all things, going to make everything put in its right place. For the Messiah, your genealogy matters because there's throughout the Old Testament, there's prophecies and people pointing forward, and it's going to look like this, and it's going to happen through this, it's going to come through this line. So this is very important to bring about credibility. But the people on that list are very questionable. Because Herod, who's the king, right? Herod is like the king. If you think about it, the king is supposed to be like the hero of a story. He's supposed to be good. And we have Jesus, this other little king. And they couldn't be even like more apart because Herod rules with fear. Herod rules with power. And don't you ever cross me or you're out. And what Herod actually does, he has his genealogy, and he got rid of part of it because part of his history, he had this certain bloodline that was kind of like the people on the wrong side of the tracks, right? And it was like that, kings don't have that kind of history. Kings don't have those kind of people in their life. Why? Because to be anything scandalous, anything that might be perceived as being off or wrong or bad was a threat to being a good king. And what Jesus does, he flips it. It's like Matthew really wants us to know that, like, Jesus is a king, but he doesn't act like all the kings. This king is different. Because the people on this list are messy. Like, if you've never really like dived in, started reading through the Bible, if you start doing that, you're going to be shocked. You're going to be surprised. And you're going to have like all these like interesting feelings because when I read it in the Old Testament, and there's like murder, there's incest, there is affairs, there is like genocide. There's crazy things. My favorite story, there's like an old guy who sets a bear on these teenagers because they called them bald, right? And you're reading that, and that's not like clean, easy, and simple. You're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, got it. I'm glad I read that story, right? You close the Bible after that point. You're like, I'm going to read something else, right? It's messy, but all of it points to something good. It's like one of the first people that gets highlighted here, right? He gets highlighted is Jacob. Jacob gets highlighted in verse 2, and it says, Jacob, Isaac the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Judah. And Jacob makes this list, and to be very clear, this is the genealogy of like the bloodline of how the Messiah came into the world, right? It's very, starts with Adam and Eve and goes to Abraham, goes all the way through. And it's this beautiful story, but the story is messy. And the way Jacob got in this story is because he lied. His brother was older than him, Esau. He was supposed to get it, and it's this weird, messy, complicated story. And he puts like a bear hair on it because his brother was really hairy, which is really weird, right? And like tricks his mom and his dad and all of it. And his brother finds out after he got the blessing. His brother finds like, "Whoa, brother, what's going on? Like, I thought we were cool, right?" And he's like, "What up?" And then Esau's like, "I'm gonna kill you," and so he runs, right? And he flees. He has to pay the consequence for his sin. He did. And as he's running, as he's fleeing, as he's in exile, he meets this beautiful woman. He falls in love, and he ruins her. It was over. Shut down shop. He falls in love. And out of that messiness, out of that complicated life, came this beautiful son, who was very messed up and complicated as well. See, these people, we can just read through and say, oh, those are all the heroes. Those are all the beautiful people. Those are the people that had it all. And if only I could try harder like them, maybe I could be a good one. But I'm not a good one. I'm a messy one. So I don't get to play. So you go next. Matthew highlights five women. in this genealogy. And this is important because at the time, women just didn't have a voice. Women didn't matter. So Matthew intentionally puts women in this genealogy. He does not need to mention them. Most of the time, they just say the males, right? Here's how it's going because they win. They write the history books, so they get to tell how it is. But he highlights women. To God, framing the whole story, to Matthew, framing the whole story of this good and beautiful life is that women matter. That, like, the people who are marginalized and oppressed that don't have a voice, they have value and they matter. Like, that's part of the kingdom. It's part of the gospel. It's part of the Christmas story. It's part of experiencing heaven is that you have a voice. God sees you. He notices you. And he's inviting you to come home. And these women, it's interesting. Oh, I gotta find right here. He intentionally does not highlight, like, the heroes. He does not highlight, the heroes of women. Instead, he highlights Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, Uriah's wife, and Mary. He leaves out Sarah, Rebecca, Leah, and Rachel. Those are like the women that you look at and say, I want to be like them. But he's saying, these women matter too. You want to be like these women. And who are these women? Like, they didn't really add up. It's a little different. Like, two of them are Gentiles. Right? They were the outsiders. They were considered like the dirty ones. They were considered like you were not, it is us versus them, and you are the them, and no way can you ever come to us. One of them, Rahab, was a prostitute. Right? That's messy. That's complicated. And God redeems her story. The outsiders. Then two of them, right? One of the women actually like has a son with her brother. That's a little awkward, right? Like, they make it into the story. That's part of this messy story of like of odd, weird, complicated, messy, deep, hard, and beautiful things. All of it, God is orchestrating. He's painting this picture that up close looks just really, like, why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. That's not how kings are made. That's not what a God would look like. It's like God's painting. He goes, but you just wait. You got to wait because there's something so beautiful happening. I don't want you to miss it. And my favorite one is how it says Uriah's wife, right? That's all it doesn't say her name, just says Uriah's wife, who is Bathsheba. And this is almost like he could have easily left this part out. He totally could have just said, all right, Solomon's dad was David. And what happened is David's on this roof, and he looks out, and he sees this beautiful woman, Bathsheba, like, and, you know, and she's in a birthday suit, right? That's, I'm trying to keep it PG, right? And he is overcome with her beauty that he says, I want that. That's mine. I'm taking that. So he goes and they sleep together, and he ends up killing Uriah. Why didn't Matthew just say her name? Why did he say Uriah's wife? It's almost like he's pointing back to him, like to the readers, like, hey, you guys remember that guy? Remember what he did? He killed him. It's like it's written just a little bit in there. You remember he killed him? Yeah, this is where the Messiah came from. This is where this good and beautiful God came from. He came from a complicated past. He came from something that was messy. And the reason I just love this is because that's me. That's me. I look through these names. I look through these stories, and I feel like I'm not out. And so often, like, and I don't know about you, but for me, there's often times in my life where I get to this point, and I'm saying, I'm never going to be a really good dad. I'll just be a good enough dad. Why? Because I yelled at my kids yesterday. And I haven't figured this out. And because I feel like I disappoint in this way, it's already worked all this like track record up that this tells me who I am now. My shame, my failures, the messiness, the reality, this is who I am. And even though I want to be something better, even though I want to be like just the best father ever, I will never be there. Why? Because that's where the good people are. You ever felt that before? You ever felt that shame? You carry that backpack around that every time there's a disappointment? Another time at work, you're just like, I just can't get it right. You walk in your house. I was just talking to, I won't say his name. I was just talking with one of my friends, and we were talking about, like, every time he pulls into the garage, he gets out and looks, and there's just stuff everywhere from when they moved in several years ago, and he's like, I got to do this, right? And even that just felt like there was even a little bit of, like, yeah, a little bit of shame attached to that. You know, God can redeem everything. God is redeeming everything. The Christmas story is that we have a God who came home. He didn't come. We talked about this last week. He didn't come and show up and say, all right, guys, I'm here. Can you guys figure this out quickly? Because I got something to do. And if you want to get on the best of it, just stop messing up. Just get perfect. Let's get strong. Let's get beautiful. Let's become winners. Right? Let's do it. Then when you're at that point, then I'll give you the best of myself. The miracle of Christmas is that he steps into our mess. He steps into our mess. And he can step into your mess too. See, I talk with people often about this. They have this idea that there is this good and beautiful life for them. And when they're kids or they're in high school or in college or they're 20s, there's like in their mind, they're like, oh, this is what it would look like to be a successful woman. This is what it looks like to be a successful husband or man or business owner, whatever it might be. It's like God gave them like this destination called the good and beautiful life. And he's like, okay, it's all the way over there. And you have to just hop on this plane and you're gonna have to make some connecting flights. And there's these elaborate airports. And like, I will tell you where you need to go. Just don't screw it up, right? You ever felt that before? Just don't screw it up. So you're like, yeah, I can do that. So you're in your 20s and you just graduated college and you're like, the good and beautiful life, I'm headed there. And you hop on that plane and you're excited and you're all-time high and you're like, you're shaking because you're so excited. And then you get off the plane and they're saying, all right, your connecting flight is at gate ZZ45 and you're at, you know, A1 and you have 15 minutes to make your connecting flight. So you do what? You run like a crazy person to make that connecting flight. Because you know, if I don't get on that plane, I will never get to the good and beautiful life. I won't get to my destination. So you do that and you make it just in time and everyone's slapping your back. Wow, you did a great job. Man, you worked hard. And you get on another plane and you get off and they're like, all right, you got to make it to the gate X43. And this time you're running like a crazy person again. You do this like, you know, for like 5, 6, 7 years of your life. Maybe you even made it 13. And then at one point, you get off the plane like, all right, you got to get the next connecting flight. You're tired. Like, I can't do this anymore. Or you trip or you get sick. You have a tragic thing that happened in your life. You go broke. You lose. You get fired from your job. You feel like this destination, you're like it takes so much work to get there. And you, for whatever reason, that you see that plane take off. And with it is all your hopes and dreams. So you look around that elaborate airport and you're like, I guess this is it. I guess this is as good as it'll ever be. I don't get the good life. I get like the third best life. Yeah, I guess this is as good as I'll ever be when it comes to my job. I'll just sit down here and just kind of, you know, be like the fourth best life. And maybe I'll have like the seventh best marriage. And maybe I'll have like the third best like circle of friends. And my health, like I would love it to be at this way. But you know what? I'm never going to get there. Why? Because I already missed it. And when I sit over a coffee and I talk to people about how they feel like their life just passed them by. And I ask them like, well, why? Like, well, I'm a mess. I already missed out. Like I had one shot and I married the wrong person. I had one shot at this job, but me and my wife got pregnant. I had one shot to be able to do this, but you know, I had to stay home with our kids because our kids just had some crazy needs that I had to take care of. If only I would have gotten to this college, if I went to college. I didn't go to college, so I'm done. When people share that with me, it breaks my heart, because I just see like there's an opportunity for you to experience the best life now. And all these other things that you've done or you have not done, they don't get to define who you are. Your mess. Your mess is not a threat. And the story of Christmas is a good God who steps into our reality. So here's my question. Like, what's in your backpack? Like, what are you carrying around with you that just tells you you're not going to be good enough? Like, what is that mess? What is that hurt? What is that lie that you just carry around with you that constantly reminds you that you're just never going to be good enough? That you have to lay down, just lay down and die slowly. It's like, I just even get this picture of like, you've heard of this house, this home where people can go into and they can thrive and they can experience healing and forgiveness and hope, and they can dream and they can laugh and they can have great friends even though it's complicated. They can have like great relationships even though it's messy and it's full of hurt and pain. And you look at the house and you're like, I want to go there, but you can't walk into the driveway because of that backpack. You're like, if I let that out, it's going to ruin everything. It's going to dirty the carpet. People are going to just think I'm a loser. I will not win. I'd rather stay all on the outside looking in. And my friends, if that is you, you are loved. You are loved. You were created for a home. And in that home, you get the life-giving beauty of God. And Christmas, I'm going to say this over and over again, Christmas is the song of heaven. It's why it feels right. And you can step into that. You can experience that. Because the thing I love about God is that he notices me in my mess, but I don't have to stay there. I don't have to stay in my mess. I don't have to stay with those things that were spoken over me. I don't have to stay, like I just said, I don't have to stay in those moments of I'm not going to be the best dad, so I'll just be the third best dad. I can see it for a lie, for what it is. And I can be with Jesus. He can give me what I need so I can continue to move on and experience that good and beautiful life. It's not too late. You haven't missed out. And here's my last point. It's like, as healthy people, right? As followers of Jesus, as men and as women, do people see your mess? Do people see what your real life looks like? Because we work really hard at making sure people don't see our real life. We don't want them to see how many dishes that we hide in the oven. Right? Anyone else? Anyone want to admit to that, right? You hide the dishes in the oven because you can't get them done? Like, we don't want anyone else to see that, like, the anxiety of the debt that we have keeps you up at night. We don't want to, like, people open up our garage and see all the boxes still, right? We don't want people to see that we're still really afraid of the dark. We don't want people to see that there's dark, hurtful things that we carry with us. Because if it's true that our mess isn't a threat to good and beautiful life, that God steps into a reality and gives us what we need, I might be making this up. Maybe there's an opportunity where we can actually share real life with one another, and that mess doesn't have to be a threat to our friends. What if God actually gave us community so we can be in those messes, and we have people can sit with us and love us and love us through it? So my challenge to you is this. Like, what would it look like to be more vulnerable? What would it look like to disclose a little bit? It's not like, you know, standing up right now and saying, oh, my marriage is falling apart. I'm not talking about that right now, right? But who can you let in on your real life? Because there's something beautiful in there. I know there's something beautiful in there. And I don't want to miss out on that. So here's what I'd like to do. I'm going to ask you to stand up a little bit, and we're going to pray. I'm going to just invite God's presence. I'm going to ask him to give us some good things. So let's stand. Christmas really does change everything. It really does change everything. Because without us being able to experience heaven, without like that, just that life-giving presence of God, it kind of feels like it could at times just like the mess wins. And when Jesus steps into the reality and he invites us into that good and beautiful life, then we can be defined by how good he is instead of how good I'm really not. And the difference is all the world. So here's what I'm going to pray, right? I'm going to invite you, if you'd like to experience God, and this is what you feel. You feel, I wrote this down, it feels like your mess has led you to the fourth best life. You stopped feeling, you stopped dreaming, and I just got this picture. You just sat like in the lawn chair outside of your house, cracked open a drink, and just watched life just pass you by. Everyone else gets to be in the parade. Everyone else gets to go and go to the destination of good and beautiful life, and I'm stuck here. And to you, if you're here, if you're listening to this on this podcast, and that's you, as I pray, just whatever it looks like for you to receive, you know, something positive from God, whatever it looks like for you to experience that, you know, that spirituality, I'm going to encourage you to do that. Because I think God might have something good for us. Let's pray. So, Holy Spirit, will you come? And I pray for my friends who feel like they're just the fourth best. I pray for my friends who feel like even in the house with like their partner, like they're not even like the best friend with that person. They're like the fifth best friend. I pray for people who feel like they've just stopped dreaming and said it hurts too much to dream because I know I'll never get there. Holy Spirit, will you come? And will you show us what it looks like? Like the miracle of Christmas that you step into our reality and said, I have something so good for you. And even now I ask God that you would go to that chair, go to that home, come to my friend, or even now, and will you show them what it looks like to get out of the chair and begin to walk. And we can move forward. We can take one more step towards a good and beautiful life. And God, thank you that you're so good that you just don't like sit back and yell at us. You got to get moving, but you give us everything we need to thrive, everything we need to succeed, everything we need to experience like wholeness, everything we need to experience healing. So will you come to my friends? Jesus, will you come? And will you let us just be the like incredibly generous with our lives, God? That like our mess, our opportunities, our downfalls, even like our questions on God, even our doubts of like how could a good God allow this to happen? Even in all of that, God, that we can still share life with one another and experience something great. We love you. Amen. So I'm going to invite the ministry team to come up. The ministry team are people who are just like you, people who have their own messes, they have their own successes, and they want to experience a good and beautiful life. And there's something really great about being able just to be in a moment, be in that space with someone else who can put their hand on your shoulder, ask you your name, and ask you like a simple question of like, well, what would you like God to do? It's not a therapy session. They're not going to like do any of this, like shame on you. They just want good things to happen in your life, same thing that God wants. So if there's anything in your life where you feel stuck or you feel like that's me, I feel like I am carrying on that backpack, man, we'd love to have you come up and receive prayer. If not, have a great rest of your Sunday, and we'll see you next week.